Welcome to Rising Stars, where Miriam Knight, publisher of New Consciousness Review, interviews exciting new voices in the world of progressive and transformational books, films, and ideas, who offer intriguing perspectives on life, the universe, and everything in between. Join us as we celebrate the conscious awakening and explore many expressions of consciousness in action.
Welcome, everyone. I am Miriam Knight, and I am delighted to welcome our guest today, William Arnst. Will started his professional career as a research laser physicist working on Star Wars high-energy lasers. He then moved on to software, writing AutoSys, an automated job control system currently in use by most Fortune 500 companies. He sold that company, retired, but then decided to make a film. He was the creator, producer, and director of What the Bleep Do We Know? It, as you might recall, is an exploration of spirituality, quantum physics, neurology, and outrageous possibilities. The film and the book were into 20 languages, and they became an international hit. Today, we're talking about his new book that he wrote with his wife, who is a visionary artist and a modern-day mystic, Deirdre Haid. And I am so thrilled to have him on the show because I think he has another game-changing product. Welcome, Will.
Well, thank you, Miriam. Glad to be here.
Will, do you, I don't know if you recall, but I was the first person to actually do a review of What the Bleep. I was at the premiere at the Baghdad Theater in Portland, and I reviewed it for New Connection, my then magazine.
Wow. Well, you know, your name was familiar, and I was like, why is this so familiar? The first reviewer, wow, at the infamous Baghdad. That's amazing.
Well, yeah. That was a game-changing film. It really was a watershed in spiritual awakening, I would say. And you are showing your old flair with this not-so-little book of surprises. I'm sorry Deirdre couldn't be with us today, but tell me what you two had in mind with this book.
Well, I'm starting to wonder how much it was in my mind or her mind and how much it was in the mind. Mm-hmm. Because what happened was Deirdre, she's been having mystical visions since she was 3 years old, and they've never let up. So she's a mystic, and she's been writing poetry. She's working on a novel, which she's been working on for a number of years, and she keeps getting taken down rabbit holes on it and getting a little frustrated. And a student of hers called me up and said, you know, I think you could just put together a book of her quotes and her poems fairly quickly, at least get something out there. So I thought, well, that's not a bad idea. Let me think about it. And I started thinking about it. And within a day, I came up with this concept calling it the Little Book of Surprises. And the reason I came up with surprises was that, I know from my research in neurology that when there's a surprise, basically a lot of things happen biochemically, emotionally, and mentally that open the doorway to transformation. And it's a great way to do it. So I thought, well, let's do surprises. And part of it was because in Deirdre's writing, the way that she puts things is often surprising. She languages it a bit differently, and so the quotes come across as surprising, and some of them are pretty sassy. They're like in-your-face sassy.
Yes.
And that's really, as you know from What the Bleep, all the sassy humor in that film is basically comes from me. I like to make people laugh and entertain people, so I thought, surprises, yeah, let's call it surprises. And it basically, from when I started thinking about it till the book being completely done was 3 months to do the whole thing. It just came together so quickly. It helped that I had volumes of Deirdre's teachings to pull from. And Then it was like, well, let's put some pictures with the quotes. That seems kind of the obvious thing to do. Well, she has someone, a friend and someone she's worked with for years, Indre Balog, who, aside being a international concert violinist, is also an award-winning photographer. And he had about 3,000 of his photos laying around on his websites. And Andre is such an artist that he does great work and has no idea what to do with it, typical artist. Mm-hmm. So there I was with 10 volumes of teaching and 3,000 photographs. And Deirdre had someone, a student, Jill Hawkins, who is a graphic artist, and I call up Jill. I said, Jill, you want to put together a book? She goes, sure. And so all the pieces were there, and it just came together. And so when you ask, you know, what did we have in mind when we did this, in the beginning it was just, let's get those quotes, let's get the pictures out there, make it something that people enjoy. It's a fun book, and it really started morphing, and I was pulling these quotes out, and in the end it ended up doing something beyond what we had originally thought. So that was the surprise was on us.
It's interesting when three artists like the three of you come together, each one contributing a facet of it. So Deirdre contributed the words. You contributed the selection, the creation, the greater vision and how to put it together. And then Andre, he himself is a mystic in his photographs, and he's got the most visionary creations as well as spectacular photographs. And I was surprised when I visited his website to find that some of them are on shower curtains and all kinds of things. Absolutely stunning. I mean, I can imagine somebody going into a guest shower or bathroom and seeing that on a shower curtain. But really, the interplay between the two of you, how was it to work together? It's just the sum is just so much more than the compound parts.
Well, how it was to work together, I mean, part of that is because of my experiences of filmmaking. Filmmaking is always a collaborative process.
Uh-huh.
And certainly in What the Bleep, working with my fellow filmmakers, Mark and Betsy, you just learn the creative process. And, you know, kind of the joke is that for this book, if this was a film, Deirdre would be the screenwriter, I would be the director, and Andre would be the cinematographer. Those are the roles typically in that, and that's really the roles that it were missed. Now, as far as working together, my deal with Deirdre was she wasn't allowed to make any comments until the book was done. And the reason I did that is Deirdre is such a perfectionist that, and that's why she's, you know, writing these novels. She's such a perfectionist that my take was she gets tripped up in the perfection of everything. Mm-hmm. So my thing was, look, I don't want to deal with any of that until the book is more or less done, and then, you know, look at it. So we did that, and the joke is now that she's glad we did that, because all the quotes that I picked, or most of them, they're very edgy, they're sassy, some are funny, and a lot of them are very profound, too. But the joke is she would have made it would have been, you are the light of God, and wonderful angels will come visit you, and, you know, that sort of stuff. Uh-huh. And every picture in the book would be pink with roses around the edge. So the fact that I'm there, you know, it's a little different. And all that it's all done, she's very happy about that. So what happened was I put the book together, and you know, there was help. There was Andre would sometimes suggest photos for quotes. Jill would suggest them. I didn't let Deirdre, every once in a while Deirdre would see one and she'd say, no, we can't use that picture. I'd say, well, it's just temporary. And of course, I knew I'd never change it. And then finally, when we had it more or less done, then it's like, okay, honey, here we go. And then she was like, whoa, this is a surprise. I said, well, at least we're delivering on the promise. And then she got more involved. And there would be sometimes there would be a quote that I picked, and she'd say, you know, yeah, that's it, but that was really part of a bigger teaching, and I need to add a line to. So she would do things like that, and then I ordered it, and then she went in and she reordered it, the sequencing. And then I went back and reordered her reordering, and then the two of us went together and analyzed it. The one thing that I did was to give the book, I didn't want it just to be a series of one-offs. You know, it's like, okay, here's an interesting quote with a picture, here's an interesting quote with a picture. I wanted to have a through line. So there was a story. And so she had written this poem called In the Honey Jars, which I think she wrote it 2 or 3 years ago. And it had always been my favorite. It's a long poem, and I just always found it beautiful. It's very trippy. It's otherworldly, and yet it's also very centered and earthy. And I just had the idea right away, that's going to be the backbone of the book. And we'll scatter the poem in the honey jars throughout the whole book. So on the one hand, you can read it like just open a page and read it, a quote and think about it. Or you can also just sit down and read it sort of cover to cover, in which case it feels actually like a movie in that there's a through line, you go into sections, and people who do that say, yeah, it takes about an hour and a half. It's like a movie that I get to play on my own mind. So that's a long answer to how we all work together.
Well, that answer took us to our first break. We are speaking with Will Arnst about the Not-So-Little Book of Surprises. Stay with us and we'll be right back.
Your Conscious Lifestyle on Steroids. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hi, everyone. This is Shea Parker, the host of Best of the Best, which airs live right here on IOM Radio every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern and 5 p.m. Pacific. I'm super excited to bring you expert guest hosts, spiritual discussions, free psychic readings, and so much more. I can promise that you will not want to miss this one-of-a-kind, fun, yet touching, down-to-earth show. Join us every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific on OTRFM. This is Shea Parker, and I can't wait to see you there.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family, and then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee, and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. I'm Miriam Knight, speaking with Will Arnst about the Not-So-Little Book of Surprises. Will, you said that it would take about an hour and a half to read through the book, but I beg to differ because I could not help but stop every few pages and just contemplate the message and try and understand in my heart what Deirdre was saying. What do you feel is kind of her core message?
Oh, my. I would, I would say there's three or four core messages in the not so little book. And the one message that starts right off with the second page or third page in the book is, you are a mystic. You were born a mystic. You will, if you're here, you're a mystic. You were born a mystic and you will die a mystic. And there's no way you're going to get out of it. So a whole theme through the book is one of people being mystics. And what she's experienced in her life, because, like I said, she came into the world that way, that for a mystic in this world, it's kind of a rough going. And mystics have been told over the years that they're crazy, that if you're seeing things, you're somewhat psychotic, and all those type of things. And so part of it is allowing people to embrace that they're mystics, that they're visionaries, that they're seers. And then based on that, once you embrace that concept, okay, as a mystic, what does that mean in your life? How do you live your life? What do you do? What do you avoid? What do you bring towards yourself? So there's a whole theme through the book of what it is to be a mystic and what are your duties and responsibilities as a mystic and that sort of thing. So that's the first one that comes to mind.
Let's just stop there for a moment, because I think that's a very important and challenging topic. Because even if people don't consider themselves mystics, many people have had mystical experiences. And I believe that, as you say, that we all have the potential to open to our mystical side, to open to a mystical connection. But we are kind of shamed or ridiculed into closing that down, that aspect of ourselves. So having these kind of cheeky little invitations or reminders, I think is so delightful. You did the same thing with What the Bleep. This is just a two-dimensional or monodimensional version of it. It isn't really, because it elicits many different dimensions as you read it.
Well, that is, and what you say is that's a lot of why all of that is there. And, you know, when you say, well, you're not mystics, but you've had mystical experience, I mean, I might even stretch that and say, well, if you've had a mystical experience, you're a mystic. You've had that. The doorways have opened for you. It's gone there. You've done it. And the reason you don't think more of yourself as a mystic is because of all the baggage and all the societal pressures that are put on that. Now, The good news is, as far as I'm concerned, that things are a lot different now than 12 years ago when What the Bleep came out. When Bleep came out, if you told people you were meditating and doing that sort of stuff and were investigating your past lives, they would look at you like, you know, you were about ready to go drink some Kool-Aid somewhere. But nowadays, it's really much more. I mean, you drive down the street and every strip mall has a yoga studio. 10 years ago, if you said you did yoga, people kind of looked at you a bit askance. So I think that what we're seeing in society is an embracing of the mystical. And that was something very nice you said early in the introduction when you said you thought that this book was a game changer also. That's what we're hoping it is. And one of the game-changing things is embracing the mystical and saying there's a quote about, you know, people used to always say it was woo-woo, but it's not woo-woo. It's just another way of accessing information and knowledge about the universe.
I remember reading a book by Story Waters called Your God, Get Over It. I thought that was the most wonderful title for a book. And what you're saying is you're a mystic, get over it and embrace it. Let's go back to the honey jars. I was wondering why the motif of the honey jars. So every time the honey jars come back, that's part of the same poem?
It's all the same poem. It's a long poem. And Deirdre was given the poem by the prophet Isaiah. Now, I'm going to pause for a second here. Deirdre has been talking, conversing with these beings, a whole raft of being angels, masters, that just is, that's been her life. So about, I guess, 2 years ago, she just was in an altered state, and this poem from Isaiah, the prophet Isaiah, just came to her. And so when these things happen, she on the one hand, she's hearing it, but it's not exactly just channeling, because she's also interpreting it and using her languaging and poetry skills to bring it in. But it was Isaiah came to her, and it's this story about the bees. And it's Isaiah is off in the other dimensions, and he's been tripping around through the universe, and the bees come to him way out in Andromeda and say, can you please come help us? Because as we know, the bees are really in trouble right now on the planet. Pesticides are killing them and all this other stuff. And people don't realize if the bees go away, guess what? Our food supply goes away because of all the pollination. So the bees come there, and then it's this whole thing about Isaiah returning to the planet Earth and doing a bringing prophecy back to the planet Earth. And that's really what the poem is about. And it's using the symbology of the honey, because in, for instance, ancient Egyptian times, honey was considered enlightenment. It was that golden color. It was the sweetness of life that was associated with enlightenment. So it's really also a metaphor for bringing the light and anchoring the light back into the planet, and it's happening through prophecy.
And anchoring the sweetness of life back into the planet.
And anchoring the sweetness of life, because, you know, as we all know, it can get pretty bitter, but this doesn't necessarily, it's not supposed to be like that, and it doesn't have to be like that. So, I mean, there was even a quote in the book about tasting the sweetness, how we need to taste the sweetness. So that's why the honey jars.
It's my favorite part of the book. Because as you were speaking of the prophet Isaiah, I'm reminded that there was somewhere in the Bible a parable or a riddle relating to the carcass of a dead animal that had honey inside. Did Deirdre ever mention that in connection with the poems? I'm going to have to go find that. It's bugging me. Okay. It's being me.
It's being you. Good. I was going to say the same thing. It's bugging you. It's being you. And there's this, did you notice in the book, Deirdre was like, okay, we need pictures of the bees. We need pictures of the bees in the book. And Andre was up here shooting the honey jars, and he here's a, sort of an example of working together. And he was, I'm not going to go shoot honeybees. I don't like bees. They sting me. I don't like bees. I'm not going to shoot them. So he's going on and on about this. And Deirdre, on the other hand, is going, take Andre, take him outside, go up to the lavender bush and just have him take it. So finally I got tired of all this, and I'm like, come on, Andre, let's go. Well, I don't know. Come on, let's just go. And so I use my, you know, directorial thing, and we march him out there, and he takes those pictures in the honeybee, and the book, so people know, it's a 9x11, it's a coffee table size book, and there's this one picture of the bee where the bee's like 8 inches tall. He, you know, Andre being such a perfectionist, he puts on his macro lenses and does all his filters and all this, his great stuff, and takes these pictures of the bee. And finally he's like, whoa, they came out better than I thought. So that was working with artists. There you go.
They really are stunning photographs. I don't have the book with me, but I scribbled some notes. It really is a big little book of surprises. So I didn't take it with me. But you had an interesting bit where you write, or she writes, God actually wrote a map, a code, so that you could enter into God's joy, happiness, and bliss whenever you want to. What does this actually mean? I had to contemplate a lot of these quotes and trying to figure out the meaning behind the poetry.
Well, what that means is God wrote a map, and saying a map, I mean, that's just basically there are teaching, there are ways, there are disciplines, there are ways of awareness, there are techniques in order to get back to God. That's the map.
Mm-hmm.
And a bit of it, I pulled that quote because, first off, I liked it. And again, this is the languaging. People just kind of assume, okay, yeah, there's this practice, you can meditate, you can, you know, we can do all this stuff. But referring to it as a map, saying, no, this is just the map on how you get back, I thought that was a great way of doing it. And I put it towards the beginning of the book because I'm basically saying, guess what? You got the map in your hands, everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Not that this is the definitive map. There are many maps. But this is another map. This book is another map to get you back there. And there are awarenesses and techniques in the book itself that is the map. So enjoy the trip back.
Further on in the book, you talk about the place of ancient texts in modern life. Continuing with the analogy of the map. And you're suggesting that we need to read these ancient texts, but in a new way. Tell us about, after the break. You can tell us about...
after the break.
What you meant.
Okay.
So we're speaking, we'll be back with Will Arnst speaking about the Big Little Book of Surprises, or the Not-So-Little Big Book of Surprises. There we go. We'll be right back.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations, to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
Sparky the Fire Dog here. Make sure your family has a fire escape plan, and they practice it twice a year. One important thing to practice is get low and go. If you see or smell smoke, it's important to get low and go. Protect your family from fire. For more information, visit sparky.org.
We want to keep you, your family, and your community safer from fire. This message brought to you by the National Fire Protection Association and your local fire department. Visit sparky.org.
And we're back. Before we go any further, Will, is there a website for the book or a website you direct people to?
Yes, bookofsurprises.com.
Very good.
That was easy.
Bookofsurprises.com. Easy peasy. Uh-huh. So, yes, we've got this reference to ancient texts, and I kind of think of them you know, they are from every different tradition. I kind of think of them as training wheels for life. And at some stage, we're ready to get rid of the training wheels and really take off. So, but we have used them to get us to the point where we have expertise in life and can master our journey forward. So that's the way I interpreted it. How do you interpret it?
Well, the way that I interpret it is that the ancient texts, they gave techniques and ways for people to find the map back to God. Mm-hmm. But things are a little different now. I mean, the you know, back when Isaiah was doing his prophecy, people weren't working 18 hours a day and having plugged into the internet for 16 of those hours. And so that changes things. So one must, you know, when you see these techniques, they were designed for when they were. There's, of course, an eternalness to them. It's like gravity is always gravity. But still, you have to look at that with the lifestyle that we're living now and the way we're living. But I actually have an even better example of that, since you asked. In the center of the book, there's a quote, and it's the only quote that doesn't have a picture with it. And the quote goes like this: "The darkness serves the light if you are conscious. The darkness is just the darkness if you are unconscious." Now, that's something that Deirdre said. It took her 5 years to work to boil that down to that quote, because she was getting glimpses of it here and there. Finally took her. So last week, a man, Dawa Phillips, who is a Buddhist teacher here in Santa Barbara, was over for dinner. And he was looking at he was paging through the book, and he stops and looks at that and just goes to Deirdre, "Where did you get this?" Deirdre says, "Well, it took me a number of years. I had to clear da 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 da. Why do you ask?" He goes, "Let me tell you one of the most powerful and frequently quoted sayings of the Buddha. The samsara serves the Dharma if you are conscious. The samsara is just the samsara if you are unconscious."
Oh, my. Uh-huh.
Yeah. We all went, "Holy Moses." So there is an example of when you go up to someone on the street and you say, "Hey, the samsara serves the Dharma if you are conscious," they're like, "What are you talking about?" But if you say the darkness serves the light if you are conscious, so that's just a very overt example of translating the ancient texts in a new way.
Well, actually, I was very taken with that quote, and I had scribbled it down to bring up next, but you beat me to it, because I thought it was particularly appropriate at this time in our national history, because there is so much angst on all sides about the elections and about the future of the company, even about the country, even about the future of the world. And I think it really is important that we focus on the fact that the darkness does serve the light if you are conscious. So it behooves all of us to be aware of the needs of the greater society, not just our own entrenched needs, but try and understand things from other people's perspective. And that will form the basis upon which we can come together, because otherwise it's just darkness. So I think this was such a profound quote. It really, really spoke to my heart.
Yeah, and it really does mine, and it's so weird that when you just kind of grab the book and open to it, 9 times out of 10 it opens to that page. I find that very strange. But the let me say something about that quote, "The darkness serves the light if you are conscious," in reference to the election. Mm-hmm. And this is something that Deirdre has been saying. Just so you know where she and I are coming from, we voted for Hillary and were offended by so much of what our president-elect did. But he's now the president-elect. And so what she's been saying is, well, the darkness serves the light. I mean, we don't know in the grand picture all. So what do we do now? Going to hate and blame and sort of saying and revisiting why the movement that he created is wrong and everything. Instead of doing that, she says, what I'm going to do, I'm just praying for the light. Send the light to our president-elect. Let the light go there and wake up his higher self. And that's really, you know, all we can do, is to just, you know, don't send the bad vibes. It's just the best light, the highest vibration. And, you know, maybe we don't know the big picture. Maybe this was the perfect thing to happen. Another thing about that quote, the darkness serves the light if you are conscious. One of the things is that this election has brought out is a certain amount of darkness. You know, there was all the stuff about different races. There was the sexual stuff. There was all the stuff. But see, all that stuff was there. It was in the human unconscious. But now it's been on the news. It's been brought to the consciousness, and people are like, oh, this is a, you know, so many Americans think this way. Oh, we didn't know that. So we didn't know it, and now we do. So that is bringing, that in effect brings that darkness to the light. And now that it's in the conscious realm, that people are talking about it, now we can deal with it instead of having it smolder around in the unconscious.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think it, and the other thing is that it's well known that what you focus on increases. Energy flows where thought goes. And it's not only for the president-elect that we need to focus our highest light, but also on all of us. Many people are feeling despair. A trepidation. Some people we've already seen in the news are feeling enfranchised to go and act out their worst impulses. And right. Even those we have to cover with light, because until we all come together in a positive way, we're just going to be increasing polarization. So here, here for consciousness and light.
Yep.
Oh,
it's all
God. Okay. Well, let's talk about another paradox that you mentioned in the book. You say you are separate from every other mind. You are at the same time one with every other mind and every other thing in the universe. I love this feeling that we're not just citizens of planet Earth, but citizens of something much, much greater and more eternal. How did you interpret it, or give us a little explanation?
Well, on that one, I decided not to interpret it.
Uh-huh.
To me, you know, part of being a mystic, part of being in the spirituality, is the paradox. I mean, it's a paradox. You say, oh, on the one hand, we're one, and on the one hand, we're separate. Well, when you think about it, it's like, well, wait a minute. You can't have both. How can you be one with everything and then be separate at the same time? Because if you're blah, 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 blah. And the mind at that point just doesn't know what to do. And so to me, and this I hear a lot from Deirdre, is, you know, being a mystic, you're living in the world of paradox, because there's some things that just don't make sense, and yet you know it's true. And I think that one of the things we do in our rational mind, and we're taught, especially in the West, that to be in the rational mind is you're always trying to figure things out, and let's logically do this, and let's be scientific about it. If A means B and B means C, that means A means C. That's kind of built into how we think. But in the mystical world, that's not true. A may be B and B may mean C, but that may mean that elephants are lighter than mouses. I mean, there's just these things that just don't make sense. And it's neat to hang with the paradox, because it's like, you know, driving with the brakes on is kind of different. But, you know, I don't interpret that. I just say, well, can I expand my mind to get to the point where both are true at the same time?
Mm-hmm. Well, how did you cover the space between being a laser physicist and being yourself a modern day mystic?
Well, that's a good question, because that's a bit of a surprise to myself too. I mean, I was just, I mean, the math and the physics, I was always very good at. I really enjoyed it. My mind tends to work that way. And then when I decided to make What the Bleep, I had done some movie making earlier, but certainly nothing professional, nothing at that scale, just sort of messing around and playing around when I was in high school and college. So kind of my joke to myself was, it just so happened I was able to do it, not for any particular reason that I know of. And I guess it's just the old follow your bliss thing that I was inspired to do that, and it turned out I was able to do it. You know, the bit about putting the book together, again, this is what a lot of artists say, is you ask them, okay, why didn't you, can you do what you do? And in the end, we all just kind of shrug and go like, well, I don't know. I'm just lucky, I guess. I don't know. And I mean, there's a lot of hard work too. But it's something. And I guess I crossed the bridge between the left brain and the right brain. So
I think that's a common characteristic of artists in general, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I mean, for some artists, then you get people more like Endre, who he's just an artist. I mean, he was soloing with the LA Philharmonic at the age of 9. So child prodigy on the violin, and then the photographs are just amazing. And you ask him, there's one of the things that's crazy is there's photographs in the book that are perfect with a quote, and he took the picture 4 years earlier. And they're weird pictures anyway, like the one with the big eye in the rearview mirror. You say, Endre, why did you think of doing that? Oh, well, I thought it would be great. And here we go for a break.
We'll be right back. We're speaking with Will Arnst about the not-so-little Big Book of Surprises. Be back with our final segment.
Bringing you the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, your conscious lifestyle on steroids. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
Join me, Maggie Chula, on Mondays at noon Eastern for Mastermind with Maggie. Let's work together in a mastermind. We can resolve life's problems and create goals for the future. Build action steps empowering you to create your life in partnership with your divine source of light, your soul. Manifesting your goals can be simple and easy, so come with your problems and leave with a plan. The Akashic Master Teachers and I are waiting to help you.
Today, my new dad threw a barbecue.
I burnt everything.
And then we played catch.
I broke Mr. Lewis's window. And then, somehow, my hand!
And then my dad even let me drive his car.
The hospital's on the right!
It was a rough day.
It was a great day.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of kids in foster care will take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Music. Welcome back. We're here with our final segment with Will Arnst. And Will, you were talking about your journey from physicist to mystic. I'm wondering if you had any spiritual mentors along the way.
Well, yes, I did. My first one was, my first teacher was Rama, also known as Dr. Frederick Lenz. He was an American, pretty much the same age as I was, and I ran into him in my early 30s, and he just started going into advanced stages of samadhi and became a teacher, and I was his student for about 12 years. And he was the reason I did the software company. It became a spiritual task for everyone to write a software product and sell it off and do that whole thing. So, teacher for many years, and then I moved on, and then I ended up out in Washington studying with Ramtha, and I was in the Ramtha school for many years, probably 10 years, and, you know, a lot of the what the bleep really came out of the things I was learning at the school there. And his take on things was much different than Rama's, and that was quite amazing, and it was a whole different thing. And like I said, so much of the teaching and Ramtha is in the What the Bleep movie. Mm-hmm. There was that, and then when Bleep was done, I felt my time there was done. And then I started going to some retreats and seminars with Deirdre, and you know, learned a lot of stuff there that was different than the other two. But then things moved off into another dimension with Deirdre and I, and as they say, the rest is history.
Would you say there's been kind of a logical evolution of your spiritual thinking?
A logical evolution.
I know that sounds a bit like a contradiction, but as I get the books that come through for review, I'm seeing it's like Barbara Hubbard's spiral of conscious evolution. We keep on coming around in circles, but at a higher level, a higher level of refinement, a higher level of openness, I think, to the possibilities of universal connection, universal mind, of unlimited possibility. Where do you think your particular insights are going?
Well, I'm not quite sure where they're going. To answer your question about is there a logical evolution, what it feels to me is like each path I chose just filled in other parts that the other one didn't. So mm-hmm. The first one was dealing with Rama. We learned certain things, but there was other things that I felt lacking. When I was out with Ramtha, there was things that got filled in and other awarenesses that were completely new that wasn't there. And then being with Deirdre, she has a different take on things. It's the same, but, you know, the focus is different, and I've learned a whole different thing on that. I mean, just to give an example, so I'm not talking theoretically, you know, with Deirdre being a woman is much more about relationship. She's much more about relationship with people, relationship with nature, relationship with the planet, relationships. That's just a focus that you see a lot. Whereas in the early days, like with Rama, he was kind of more the Buddhist type thing, where relationship was, was kind of this unseen thing, like, well, that'll just slow you down, so just go in a cave and meditate and it'll all work out. That's an overstatement, but I'm exaggerating a little. So, you know, I see that all these things, they just were just such vast creatures, each one of us, and each one path was filling in something different.
Do you think this book will appeal to any particular age group?
Well, my hope is that it will appeal to many, many age groups. Someone looked at the book and they said, oh, it's a children's book for adults and an adult book for children. And that's pretty much, I think, a kind of thing. I mean, one of my hopes is that six-year-old kids are going to see it sitting on the coffee table, and they're going to go up, they'll open it, and they'll just be mesmerized by the photograph. And, Mommy, what's this say? I'm learning to read. What's this say? And read it. And there's that one story about the little princess in the book, which is a little fable. It's a two-page fable. And that's the perfect thing to read to some kid as they're going to bed. I mean, so my hope is that really it goes across ages and everyone, you know, a book for everyone.
Talking about that little fable, Will, I can just see you making an animated short out of that.
Well, a lot of people say, well, I can see a movie coming out of this. And, you know, in a weird way, I wouldn't say it's Bleep 2, but it's Bleep 1.5. I mean, it goes off in a different direction, but it's kind of, I don't know, it may be a pathway that dealing with the mystical in a more direct way, that it may end up being yet another movie. We don't know. I never thought 6 months ago we'd be having this conversation about the book, so who knows what's in store.
Well, if you don't, I certainly don't, but I will wait with great interest to see what comes next. Was there a particular surprise for you in the book, since we call this book the Book of Surprises?
The big surprise was kind of when it was all done. I said, oh, my God, this is a book of prophecy. There's a lot of prophecy in the book, and it's not prophecy like, in 2 years from now, the third dimension will become the fourth dimension and blah, 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 although there's a bit of that. But there's kind of a tone through it that keeps repeating about sort of where we're going and where we're headed. And really, that's prophecy, and it's not, it isn't so much like, well, let me just say it was unexpected prophecy, which is always a surprise.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly with the motif of the honey jars, if this book is indeed prophecy, I think we can all look forward to a very positive time ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to what we were saying earlier, it really depends on what our attitude towards life is. If we act as if life will be positive, is positive now, and we do all that we can to embody that, it will be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It will be a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, here we go. Oh, something I want to mention. My publisher's been bugging me to always mention this on interviews. Is that the book? It's a 9x11. We went to a very high end printer because the photographs were so gorgeous. We said, well, we have to do it. So we went to a high end printer, and we're almost giving the book away. It's the price is $18.95, which is basically what you'd more or less pay for a print paperback. And we're doing that, and I just want to tell people, we're doing that because we want the book to get in a lot of hands, because there's a magic to it. And $18.95 is three trips to Starbucks. So, and this will last longer than three cups of coffee. So that's kind of what we're doing. So, because people have told us, you know, we talk about this, and everyone talks about beautiful poetry, blah, blah, blah. They think, oh, it's this big coffee table book. It's going to be, you know, an investment of a lifetime to buy a copy or two. But I just want to say that we really want to get it out into as many hands of as many ages as we can. And that was the best way to do it. So I just wanted to mention that.
Well, if we're talking about coffee table books, the photographs alone make it worthy of a place on anyone's coffee table. And the poetry alone, ditto. So the combination is an absolutely winning collaboration. And I can't recommend this highly enough for absolutely everybody on your Christmas list. It is a gorgeous book. Very hefty, very solid, beautifully put together. And kudos, Will, to you and Deirdre
Andre.
What is his nationality? Where does that
Hungarian
name come from? Hungarian.
Andre Balog. Yeah, Hungarian.
Hungarian is a fascinating language. Not, I think it's related to Sanskrit. Anyway.
I think, yeah, there's something, though, a little odder about it. And it's kind of related, but it kind of isn't. It's one of those things I seem to remember. It just sort of, it's like, well, where does this come from?
And basically, when it plug into the universe.
Yeah, and so basically, whenever it's where does this come from, it's like, oh, star beings.
Of course. Well, there you have it. The end of the show. Will, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you.
And do join us next week. In the meantime, have a wonderful, positive, blessed day, week, and be kind to yourself. Goodbye.